Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today we're going to be talking about plastic surgery. It's been renamed aesthetic surgery. And the big moral question for Christians is this. Should we give ourselves to surgery that is merely about changing appearance? Should we try to transform ourselves, redefine ourselves by means of surgery? This is no small question, because we are looking at millions of these procedures being done every year in the United States of America. I think most people will be surprised to know just how many of these procedures are done, and how young some of the patients are, and how exotic some of the procedures are. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. Let's give you the phone number. It's 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can get ready to add your word to this. Because I believe, as a Christian theologian, that this is a matter of deep moral significance. Because, after all, this has to do with the human body. It has to do with how we define ourselves. It has to do with the ethics of medical procedures. It has to do with scarce dollars for medical treatments. And it has to do with the fact that in a consumerist society where physical attractiveness is now one of the main driving forces in the culture, you have a great incentive for persons to undergo this kind of surgery. It's 877-893-8255. In terms of the news today, the big story is that former Enron chairman Kenneth L. Lay was found guilty on each of the six counts of fraud against him. His protege, Jeffrey K. Skilling, was convicted on 19 of 28 counts, including bank fraud. That's big news. And this is one of those opportunities for me to come to you and say, I'm not sure what justice would look like in this case, and I want to tell you why. There is satisfaction on the part of many people, especially those who were hurt by the fall of Enron, that this is right, that these men deserve to be punished. And looking at the evidence and at the verdicts, it appears to me that there's really no doubt that Jeffrey K. Skilling deserves some kind of criminal prosecution. When it comes to Kenneth L. Lay, I'm not sure. And I think most Americans are at this point unaware of how the corporation came into being. The corporation is a fairly modern invention. It was an invention to shield individuals from personal liability. The corporation basically developed a new legal person in terms of the law. This new legal person is a company that indemnifies all of its participants from being individually liable for the liabilities of the company. On the other hand, they can individually profit from the profits of the company. So you can lose money, but you do not have the total liability. In this society, you have an incredible pressure on CEOs of businesses to do well, to increase the bottom line, to increase the profits, to increase the stock price, and on quarterly reports, to be able to show a significant gain. And so we as a society incentivize that kind of gain, and we brutally punish any kind of loss. I cannot read Kenneth L. Lay's heart. I would not presume to do so. But I know that this is a very complex case, because here was a man who was actually buying the stock in his company as the company was falling. That's not generally what one does if one is abandoning a sinking ship. There is no doubt that the fall of Enron is a great moral parable. It is a parable about human hubris, about pride and arrogance, about overreaching and greed. Is it a parable about criminality at the very top? I don't know. And I'm not sure that this verdict actually helps us to answer that question. Given the judge's very controversial directions to the jury, there is the likelihood that an immediate appeal might be successful, at least in the case of Kenneth Lay's convictions on all six counts of fraud against him. I don't know what justice will look like here. I do know that this is a case that also reminds us that human justice can only go so far. Follow me on this, folks. Let's assume that Kenneth L. Lay is as guilty can be on all of those counts. Let's assume that Jeffrey Skilling is as guilty can be on even more counts. Let's assume that we can execute the maximum punishment on them for this kind of crime. Let's assume that we would put them in a maximum security prison with hard labor and no opportunity for parole. By the way, that's not going to happen, but let's just assume we could do that. Let's assume that we could keep them in jail for the rest of their lives, never allowing them one moment of happiness, never allowing them to see their families again, never allowing them to see the light of day. Let's assume that we could mete out the ultimate penal punishment of which our system is capable, short of the death penalty, which, of course, does not apply here. Let's assume we could do that. Would that be justice? No. If people were looking for a way to punish, it would be the maximum conceivable way we could punish persons in a civilized society, persons who have not committed a capital crime. But this does not lead to the restitution of the losses of those who lost so much. You have people, you had secretaries and truck drivers and workers and stock owners and holders and stakeholders and all the rest that had invested their lives in this company. At one point, some of them had the real asset in the bank of stocks in Enron that were estimated to be a value of $1 million for their retirement, for several hundred thousand dollars. One man interviewed just today had $380,000 in Enron stock that in a matter of days went down to $1,200. In other words, he had his nest egg for retirement. Now he has nothing. You can put Ken Lay and Jeffrey Skilling together in a prison cell for the rest of their lives, and that will not mean one more dollar for those persons. Why is this worth talking about? It is for this reason. Our responsibility as Christians is to think Christianly about these things, and one issue of crucial Christian thinking in this comes down to the fact that we in this life do have the responsibility through our court system, through our laws, and through our cultural insistence that we make an attempt at achieving justice. But we'd better be very, very humble and very, very honest about the fact that we cannot achieve perfect justice. That will have to await a judge very different than any human judge. That will have to await a verdict that will be very different than any human verdict. Just think about the end of the Bible when we are given a vision of the judgment that is to come, when God, the holy and righteous judge, will effect his judgment on all humanity. When that happens, total justice will be achieved. That's why in the book of Revelation it speaks of every tear being wiped away, every eye dry. It's because when God the judge brings his final judgment, it will not only be, this was right, that was wrong, this is guilty, this one by the merits of Christ is not. It will be, here is the restoration of all things as they ought to be. Here is the final disposition of everything as it ought to be, by the only judge who will ever exist, who can actually make his decision achieve total justice. We will watch the appeals process with Mr. Lay and Mr. Skilling along with you. This may be a great day for justice in the United States of America. If nothing else, it sends a signal that white-collar crime is taken seriously. But will this stand? I do not know. In a fallen world, justice is a very approximate target at best. It's an inexact science at best. And we can just hope that this is something that will point an entire culture towards righteousness rather than deeper moral confusion, and beyond that into anxiety and apathy. While we're talking about big high-powered executives facing the verdict of justice in this trial, we need also to be reminded of the fact that moral issues filter down into other layers of society where there are no CEOs or big Hollywood celebrities or others watching. What about in the interior life of American adolescents? What about in the internet sites where these teenagers are blogging about all manner of things? ABC News reporter Dean Reynolds takes us into the lives of some of these teenagers with a headline story that asks this question: detention for a high school blog entry? That's what's happening in some schools, where schools looking out for the welfare of their students are cracking down on student blogs that include incriminating, threatening kinds of language and material, that have inappropriate material that could range from pornographic to celebrating pictures of themselves drinking or smoking or in sexually suggestive poses. The reporter, Dean Reynolds, takes us into the life of Libertyville Vernon Hills Area High School in the suburban area of Chicago in northern Illinois. And here you have a school that is now threatening schools with disciplinary action and even detention and worse if they have inappropriate blog entries. Now, I bring this up because here's an interesting facet to this story. Some of the persons complaining that this is an inappropriate form of censorship on these students are the parents. You know, when are the adults going to show up in this equation? When are the adults going to show up and say, look, the school is doing what it must do to protect these students who are making themselves vulnerable? This is a school doing what it must do in order to make certain that these students do not give away their identity nor get themselves involved in these activities with no one caring. You know, you begin to wonder what's going on in a civilization when the parents are sometimes, well, more given to misbehavior than the students, their own children. We'll be back to talk about aesthetic surgery, plastic surgery from a Christian perspective. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler program. We're talking about plastic surgery, aesthetic surgery, it's called now. And in fact, in the profession, the names of journals and professional organizations have come to reflect that. And it is not inappropriate because an awful lot of what's going on in the world of what is called plastic and reconstructive surgery is about aesthetics. Let me just give you a couple of statistics I think you'll find interesting. Nationwide in 2005, there were 11.5 million cosmetic, surgical, and non-surgical procedures. That's in 1 year, 11.5 million. The Aesthetic Society for Aesthetic, the American Society for Aesthetic Plastic Surgery keeps these documented figures, collecting them since 1997. The overall number of cosmetic procedures has increased 444% since 1997. Now, let me just go back to that. 444% since 1997, less than 10 years. Something is going on in this culture. Now, let me give you a couple of anecdotal issues. USA Today, major story, and what I'm going to say here will surprise some of you, but you need to hear this. USA Today reported that one of the big graduation gifts for high school senior girls is now breast implants. And in this same story, it mentions that there are parents bringing girls in as young teenagers already wanting breast augmentation surgery. There are all kinds of aesthetic, plastic, reconstructive, surgical procedures offered out there. I just very quickly, in a doctor's office the other day, noted how many of these are being advertised. And I mean, this is just like you can pick up a brochure for a new camera, a new car, for an iPod, or for a particular surgery. Some of them, by the way, by the hundreds of thousands, are of the sexual organs. That's all I'm going to say about that. Something weird is going on here. Now, as a Christian theologian, I have to look at this and say, there must be a deep spiritual issue here. Now, let me define a couple of terms. Number one, we're not talking about reconstructive surgery that would come after, for instance, an accident or a fire or a burn or something like that. We're not talking about something that will enhance, for instance, mobility or a basic human function. We're not talking about surgery so that an eyelid can close or surgery so that breathing can be assisted. We're not talking about reconstruction so that someone after a disfiguring burn can be returned as close as possible to normal and to their previous state. We're talking about completely elective procedures. That's the point. Because the driving edge and the economic expansion of aesthetic surgery, the marketing of it, the advertising, and if you doubt this, by the way, just pick up your Sunday newspaper and look in the Sunday magazine supplement and look at the ads, and there you will find them. Look in any major magazine of the cultural elite, such as New York or The New Yorker. Start looking at the ads, and you'll see doctors and clinics pushing procedures, and there's big money in it. Just to give you a couple of additional statistics, just from, for instance, 2005, there were all kinds of procedures that had to do, for instance, with breast augmentation, almost 500,000 nationwide. 500,000 different patients there. And, let's see, we're looking here at a huge, huge number, a huge number. These are extrapolated statistics, again, that are coming from the American Academy of Cosmetic Surgery. How do we think about this? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Scott, listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. you stemmed me off. I was going to say that, you know, it was appropriate for people that have been burned and whatnot. I do wonder how much of the increase in that is due to it becoming a quicker, more convenient, and even cheaper over the years. Basically just due to sheer availability.
Well, that's an important point, because by any measure, most of this just wasn't available in a previous generation. I mean, in terms of breast augmentation and other things, there were attempts. But in terms of what you have now, this is, in terms of the full catalog, this is new. Scott, let me ask you the spiritual question here. Don't you think, or do you think, let me just ask it that way, do you think we ought to be concerned if we as a culture are now fueling an industry that is about how persons look to the extent they're willing to spend money and have surgical procedures done on their bodies just to change the way they look?
I think that the underlying spiritual side of it is the same as even back when Jesus was talking about painting your face. I mean, not that I'm against wearing makeup or anything like that. You know, I want my fiance to wear makeup when we go out to nice restaurants because, you know what, it makes her feel better and she does look nice. But she doesn't obsess over it and it doesn't make her.
Yeah, I think that last statement, by the way, is what I want to go at here. It doesn't make her. I was just working with a Christian organization on its basic mission statement, and I was looking at this. And one of the things we tried to make clear when we were talking about the worth of human beings is that every single human being is made in the image of God and is deserving of full human respect, regardless of their stage of life, regardless of whether they're preborn, born, or at this point, at any stage along the age continuum. But also, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of sex, gender, regardless of physical disability, and also regardless of appearance. And you know, that last part is really important. One of the aspects fueling the desire for this kind of surgery is that we live in a society that prizes physical beauty according to certain arbitrary boundaries and principles and facets, to the point that there are women in particular, and now men too. And by the way, these statistics indicate that a growing number of men are having pectoral implants in order to have what appears to be a more muscular chest. And now it may give the appearance they're not going to be able to lift anything any more than before they had these implants, but it's a lie. I mean, basically it's making them look like they have muscles they don't have. And there's just all kinds of stuff here. There are 23 different procedures listed just on one page here. And again, a lot of these I can't even read on the air, or I will decide not to, just because I don't think we really need to go into this, other than a lot of this is obviously just for a husband or a wife, or just for a person's romantic life. We could follow this all over the place because there are so many intertwined moral issues here. What do we see as of value in the other? What draws a man and a woman together? What draws their love deeper and deeper? How do we value human beings? Is it on the basis of their physical attractiveness as we would judge that? And furthermore, what kind of need do certain persons have within themselves that would drive them to the surgeon's table in order to have a bigger this or a smaller that, a realigned that or a transformed this, in order that they could feel better about themselves? Folks, this is one of those questions that requires Christians to think. And we need to think. Again, USA Today, just in today's edition, is talking about plastic surgery, suggesting that there are now people who are doing it in pairs. According to statistics from the American Academy of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery, 34% of those surveyed report that people are getting plastic surgery now with a companion. Friends, sisters, husbands and wives, mothers and daughters. As the paper says, some of the more usual cases. It says that there are some more unusual ones as well. Quote, listen to this. I had a divorced couple come in recently, said a surgeon. I guess they wanted to get freshened up for the next experience. Something deeply sick is going on here. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, welcome back, folks. We're talking about aesthetic surgery, plastic and reconstructive surgery. We're not talking about surgery to, for instance, bring restoration in the aftermath of an accident or a burn. We're not talking about surgery to facilitate physical movement. We're talking about surgery simply for aesthetic purposes, because this is the big growth industry in terms of reconstructive surgery. This is the big issue being advertised. This is the picture of attractiveness that is fueling so much of the cosmetic and reconstructive surgery business. This is about having a bigger this or a smaller that. It's about looks. It's about how one appears. And there are women in particular by the millions, and now there are men following them in large numbers, who are having different reconstructive and aesthetic surgery procedures simply about the way persons look. This is using up medical money. This is using up medical facility. This is also suggesting something about what we believe about the human body and about the human person and the worth and dignity of every single human individual. What's going to happen? Are we going to enter this eugenic society where we now give birth to those who are going to look like we want them to look? And if that's not satisfactory, we'll go ahead and change them over a period of time. This is the stuff of which comedians have been joking for years, but it's real life now. There are persons who are on their fourth and fifth facelift, or whatever it's now called in the surgical terms. And there are persons who really look in the mirror and just decide, I want this or I want that, and go have surgery. And now USA Today is talking about mothers and daughters and sisters doing it together, even husbands and wives. I find that almost beyond belief, but it's not. It's being done by the millions. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. One of the issues we're going to talk about today is this. Is the problem in the person seeking the surgery, or is the problem in the society that that really tries to enforce this model of appearance that everyone better meet, especially women, if they're going to be acceptable, if they're going to get a man, if they're going to get married, if they're going to be happy, if they're going to have self-esteem? Let's go to Mike calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, I had pretty bad acne and rosacea when I was in high school, and my nose is about, I'm in college now, and my nose is about 50% bigger, and I've been thinking about doing it. I'm in college, I don't have the money right now, but I'm not going to tell them to do it, show them a picture of how it used to look and say, put it back this way. You know, while I'm doing it, I'm going to have it made better than it actually was before. And I think there are many situations where it might be warranted. The statistics show that juries cut better-looking people more slack, and people will make more money in their career. And if you're in journalism or film or theater or a public job where you might be in front of a lot of people, I think that it could definitely be an advantage.
Yeah, Mike, I really appreciate your candor, and you obviously are a thoughtful person. You bring some thoughtful reflection to what you're talking about here. Let me suggest a couple of ways of thinking in response to your statement. First of all, you are talking about, in the first place, a reconstructive surgery after an illness, which is the equivalent of being after an accident or something like that. And so I don't think there's a great moral concern there. And then you get to another issue, which is really about the lookism, if we want to call it that, or the appearance consciousness and appearance expectation of this society. Let me ask you, Mike, as a Christian believer, and I'm assuming you may be, I want you to tell me, do you think there's a deep spiritual issue involved here, both in the individual and in the society?
Well, I think the Bible doesn't say anything about plastic surgery. So we have to look at the other issues involved in it. And I think it gets into a continuum of changes to our appearance. Should we cut our hair? Should we wear makeup? Should we do our nails? Should we wear nice clothes? And somewhere in there you have to make a decision. And I don't think it's so much about the money, because people waste a lot of money on, you know, a lot more other things that worse than that. But I think there are situations where it's someone's someone might have. I agree with you that it's a self-esteem issue, but I don't think it's you can just condemn it outright.
Well, you know, that's a good point. But let me just ask you, as the seconds are ticking away, you would think that we have a problem when 14-year-old girls are being given breast augmentation surgery, right?
Well, that's kind of a medical issue, too. They need to finish growing before they start doing that.
Yeah,
but
well,
also,
okay, we're about out of time here. Mike, I wanted to give you the opportunity to say that there is a deeper moral issue here, and I think you know that. A very thoughtful call, nevertheless. Folks, the number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. You know, Mike had a lot of interesting points there, our last caller, and I think one of the most important points he made had to do with what he called the continuum. And he said, look, there's a continuum of moral issues here, from how you dress, whether you wear makeup. And the fact is, we all want to present ourselves well. And that's why we want to avoid hypocrisy in this. Yes, we want to present ourselves well. You know, we want to show up looking like we want to present ourselves to the public. But and he mentioned things like hair cutting and all the rest. Of course, you know, that's all a part of it. And we know what one looks like when one is unkempt and shows up that way. And yet we also know that at the other end of the continuum, there's something really, really sad going on. And this is not to heap judgment upon those who have thought about having these procedures. I do think that we must urge a serious moral and spiritual consideration there. But it is also to take responsibility as Christians to say we need to redefine beauty. I mean, after all, I think Mike said something about the Bible not speaking to plastic and reconstructive surgery. Well, that's true, but the Bible speaks to something more important, and that is to beauty. And in Proverbs 31, it's made very clear that the beauty that matters is an internal beauty. It's the beauty of character. It's the beauty of holiness. And external beauty, number one, is subjective. Number two, it doesn't last. And number three, it lies. That's the worst part of it. From a biblical perspective, external beauty can even lie. It can lead one to believe that something is beautiful when it is not. And, of course, it can lead the other way. There are things that can appear to be not beautiful, not pretty, to fallen human eyes that are genuinely beautiful. That's where, I've done so much work on a recovery of theological aesthetics, the union of the good, the beautiful, and the true, a Christian understanding of beauty. And one of the speeches I gave not too long ago, I said one of the major points of the Christian worldview is that the Christian worldview understands that the good, the beautiful, and the true are the same thing. And we understand that the face of a child with Down syndrome is more beautiful than the cosmetically enhanced face of the cover girl. Because the one isn't real, and the one is. The one is a picture of innocence that reflects the glory of God, and the other of artificiality that reflects the glory of man, of humanity. That's a very different thing. All right, let's go to Jeff, calling from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Jeff.
Dr. Mueller, thank you for taking my call. I like the response you just gave to the previous caller. I mean, I think one of the things that you've been asking callers quite directly is this a moral issue? Is this a spiritual issue? And if so, should we be concerned? And I think the answer is yes. And regardless of whether or not it's on a continuum or not, I think there's always one factor that we have to put into the forefront, and that is when we're making decisions, any decisions, is it to glorify God or is it to glorify something else? And if we answer that with to glorify something other than God, then I think we need to question that from a spiritual basis. The other point that I'd make that you've asked is, should we be concerned at this from a personal level or from a society level or maybe even both? And I think, of course, it's a mixture. And the part that worries me here is, what am I doing as a Christian, be it verbal or nonverbal, that would lead people to believe that they need to make changes? And I think probably as Christians, we don't do a good job of accepting all people regardless of who they are or what they are.
You know, Jeff, that last point, I think, is the most convicting point of all here. When Christians buy into the way the world thinks about physical attractiveness, we really compound the problem. And we really compound our own sin because we deny the glory of God in every single human face. Every single human face, every single human body, every single human being. And I do think that we must honestly say that there are some tough judgment calls here. And I would not presume otherwise. That's why, again, I'm going to come back almost every program to say this is where in the local church there needs to be a body of accountable, faithful Christians living together under the authority of Christ and the authority of God's Word who will help each other to think these things through. And we're trying to start that process right here. Let's go to Paul calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Paul.
Afternoon, Dr. Mueller. I just want to make one practical comment, and that is from all the, whenever there's been studies done on this, as far as attractiveness, you know, particularly with respect to women's figures, is it's principally a ratio between the hip-to-waist ratio, which is something that's generally not altered by surgery. You can do a little bit of liposuction, but I think a lot of people are buying into a notion of beauty that isn't really supported by the real true facts. If you see who makes it in the movies and especially, you know, the Wedding Page, things like that, that a lot of things that we generally thought of as being beautiful tend not to be really, really true. It's really the whole package as opposed to, you know, one particular surgically altered item.
Yeah, and, you know, when you say it's not true, boy, is that also true. Because you look at the way they look. For instance, when I talk to young men about pornography, one of the things I want to tell them is you're not even looking at real there. That in the old days, it used to be airbrushed. Now it's with all kinds of digital techniques. Let me just tell you, you're not seeing reality here. And that's one of the ways that pornography misleads young men about marriage is because they think, hey, that's what it's going to be all the time. And look, that's not the way it's going to be all the time. And just look at yourself. You know, everybody's got to get up in the morning with unkempt hair. That's just the way it works. That's reality. And that's the beauty of being married and loving each other because you see the inner beauty. That's also why a loving couple, Christian couple committed to marriage can grow old together. And see the beauty in each other in growing old. Let's go to Sarah calling from Irwin, Tennessee, listening on WHCB. Sarah, go right ahead.
Hi. What I was wondering is, okay, I hear what you're saying, but the people who tend to gripe about these things, they don't ever, like, seem to do anything about it. And I was just wondering, you know, what would be done about this? Because I just want to know what your take would be on that.
Yeah, well, that, you know, Sarah, there's always the so what question, and you're right to ask that. I'm not suggesting legislation. I'm not suggesting a constitutional amendment to forbid reconstructive surgery. I'm not suggesting that we arrest people trying to go to obtain it. I am suggesting, first of all, when you ask for something concrete, I'm suggesting that parents be very careful to raise their children so that they teach their children to look for inner beauty and to achieve inner beauty by the grace of God rather than to focus simply on external beauty. And I said not simply on external beauty. I'm very thankful that I'm surrounded by beautiful people. But I want to see beauty beneath the face and beneath the figure. I want to see the beauty that is within. And I think not only should parents do that with children, I think the church must do that as a body of believers. And then one of our ways of witnessing to the larger society is that we tell them about the fact that every single human being is made in the image of God. And within every single human being made in the image of God, there is true beauty, not because of who we are, but because of who our Creator is. That's a crucial point at every point of the continuum of the entire human life. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. What an important issue for us to discuss, and we've had some good thoughts put on the table here. I'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. You know, when the secular world sees a story and they see some deep significance and they're trying to figure out what it is, that's where Christians have the opportunity to step in and say, you know, we've got a stake in this. We have a particular, even sometimes a peculiar perspective on this because of who we are as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ. As Christ's disciples, we have to begin with the fact that we don't own ourselves. We do not own our own bodies. We are not the lords of our own lives. We are a purchased people. We understand that we were made by a Creator for His glory and for His purposes. We also understand that derivative of the fact that God has made us in His image, we also are to honor the body. We don't worship the body, and that's a problem. As a matter of fact, I was talking the other day to a parent who said, look, one of my challenges is that my teenage daughter wants to spend all this time in a tanning bed. because she's really turned into a fanatic about this stuff. Or, you know, someone that says their teenage son won't stop working out in the school weight room because he wants a certain look, and he's even, you know, missing meals and doing all the rest of this stuff that will be endangering his health, maybe even taking steroids because of it. There is a cult in this society of body worship. Now, our caller earlier, Mike, he said something very interesting. He said, juries tend to go easier on people that have good looks. And you look over income over the process of a lifetime, and those who look good, according to certain cultural expectations, do better than others. That is another sign to us of the deeply fallen nature, not only of individuals, but of a society. And we do not want to be blind to that. But, you know, my first thought when I hear about that is, what a tragedy that we have so distorted God's humanity given to us, God's gift of what it means to be human, that we would redefine ourselves that way. This show today is about starting a conversation, trying to think about how Christians should frame this issue. I think we've had some good lines of thinking put down. We can't buy into the wisdom of the world. We also know that we're living in a fallen world in which such things do exist as lookism and a focus on appearance and the wrong conception of beauty. We do not want to be hypocritical in that we have, as ourselves, some concern for physical appearance. We're not acting as if we do not. The question is, at what point does an appropriate concern for physical beauty and physical attractiveness turn over into something that is unhealthy, spiritually speaking? At what point do we begin to trust in our external beauty rather than looking within as God would direct us? At what point do we put our souls at risk by looking for satisfaction in our bodies when the deepest satisfaction we are to seek and to find is in our souls? Thanks for thinking with me today. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.